You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
Gary Boyson is with Rand Swiss. He's the portfolio manager there. Gary, a very happy Monday to you. It appears that it was equally happy on the markets. How did we fare today?
Yeah, so markets a little bit lackluster, I'll be honest. So we did have most of the sectors positive. We had the All Share Index up 0.2%. It was only really the financials that let us down. They slipped around 0.25%, led lower by the likes of FirstRand and Nedbank. FirstRand down just over 2%, Nedbank down just under 1%. But across it, resources still doing very well. Of course, we had some outsurance results out that rocketing up over 7%. Also a strong showing from the likes of Richemont, up well over 2%. Industrials also pretty strong, up just under 0.5%. And over in the US at the moment, we've got the S&P 500 and NASDAQ both pushing NASDAQ's now 0.7% higher. And the currency just strong. Not a lot of movement from Friday, but Rand dollar still trading around 17.35, so relatively strong compared to where we've been. And that gold price just keeps on going. So that's up to $3,680 per fine ounce.
Let's take a look at, we'll come back to gold in a few moments, but let's take a look at results from outsurance that you mentioned, a strong set of results. What can we glean from them?
I think very, very solid numbers. So we had normalized earnings up 33.7%. If you go up the income statement a little bit, operating profit up just over 25% to $6 billion. And the company really showing good organic growth. Also a much better claims environment for them, which is just helping to boost it up. At the same time, the business is following that strategy of monetizing its non-core assets. So I think what the market really liked was the announcement of the special dividend. So obviously the business operates across Australia, South Africa, and they've got the very nascent business in Ireland as well, which is absolutely tiny. South Africa contributes 55% to revenue, Australia around 45%, and Ireland is just a blip. But Ireland's still a little bit weak overall. But all told, really strong set of results, good new business flow, specifically their life business as well. That growing operating profit by over 65%. So, and that being driven by the funeral business and the direct sales as well. So overall, you can see why the stock is up 7% today. Very, very solid set of numbers, definitely ahead of what the market was expecting.
The market in the U.S. has been captured by the social media post by its president, U.S. President Donald Trump, with a suggestion to shift corporate reporting from a quarterly basis to every 6 months. I mean, suggestions like these, does our market look at this and how do they interpret it, if at all? Does it matter?
It definitely does matter. If it was to happen, it would be significant. Why would it be significant? Information flow drives markets. So to move from a quarterly reporting cycle to a semi-annual reporting cycle would make markets more opaque. Now the reason that Donald Trump is giving for wanting to do this is he says it'll let executives focus on running their businesses. There's often criticism that, if you're just always looking at the next quarterly results, you don't make those long-term strategic business decisions. The problem is that investors absolutely hate this, and it's also not an easy idea. This has been floated before, so he did bring this up in 2018. It was, very unpopular at that stage as well, and it would require the SEC to change the reporting rules. This is not rules that are set by the White House, so SEC approval would be needed. So it does seem like it's unlikely to happen. So you're probably not seeing much of a market reaction just because it seems so left field. It seems like something that can't happen. I suppose the problem is that we did have this is kind of echoing Erica McIntyre, the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that was fired for rigging the jobs numbers, and we know that the Trump administration, if they don't like numbers, they just will change the people that report them. So I think maybe we can take a little bit more seriously this time, but certainly I don't think the market giving it credit, and saying that this is just another kind of true social post, and there might not be any teeth behind the announcement. If it does materialize, I mean, it would be a significant change. It could dull liquidity in markets. The whole U.S. market is geared up towards a quarterly reporting cycle, so it would be a significant change if it was to go through. But I think at this stage, everyone kind of saying, let's see how this goes.
So fascinating. Is it so left field that we could see the Fed cut interest rates, given the pressure that Jerome Powell is under from the very same president? We're expecting that announcement this week as they're meeting.
Yeah, so you've got, I think, 2 days to go. So it'll be on the 17th. And at this stage, they're going to cut. Well, so says the market. So there's a, you know, if you look at the Fed funds futures, there's a 94% chance that we'll get a 25 basis point cut and about a 6% chance there'll be a half a percent cut. So if we do get, if what we expect to happen does happen, you can probably expect mild US dollar weakness, just as that 6% pricing comes out of the market, you know, all things being equal. But yeah, it looks like we are going to get cuts. I mean, the Fed has been delaying for a long time. And you know, looking at the other kind of economic fundamentals, the weaker jobs report, you know, I think it is warranted that we get a cut. And hopefully the South African Reserve Bank follows suit.
And let's expand on that, because that announcement is expected on the 18th of September. What are they currently grappling with, the Monetary Policy Committee?
Well, I think, you know, it's a complex, you know, South African monetary policy is a very complex issue because monetary policy, which is essentially setting the cost of your capital, is only one tool in economic policy. And unfortunately, South Africa has, you know, structural issues. And structural issues aren't fixed by making money cheaper. You know, being able to, you know, it can easily do, you know, juice the economic data, can, you know, put a little bit more money in all of our pockets, you know, in terms of bond repayments and credit card debt, etc. But at the same time, it doesn't fix the structural deficiencies that South Africa has, and that's why I think the Reserve Bank has been so hesitant to cut rates up until this point. At the same time, we are expecting a rate cut because while the Reserve Bank has been ultra conservative, and it has to be because, you know, we have to attract foreign capital. We have a much stronger currency at the moment, and we also have a fairly low, when I say fairly low, very low inflation rate given where our real interest rates are. So we look at repo rate at 7%. I mean, our prime rate's at 10.5%. Our headline inflation rate's only at 3.5%. So you are getting a significant return by investing in assets at the moment, which is one of the reasons the Reserve Bank is doing that, because they need to attract those portfolio flows. They need the foreign investors to come in, largely because we often run twin deficits. We often run a current account deficit and a fiscal deficit, and we need, and our savings pool is quite small. So we need those inflows to almost fund those deficits as well. But yeah, at the same time, that is, you know, unusual to see such a high real return. And I do think, you know, given the stronger currency, given, I suppose, a little bit of a better economic picture in South Africa, there's room, you know, specifically from an inflation point of view, I think there is room for the Reserve Bank to cut interest rates this week.
Coincidentally, Moody's has released its credit conditions report today, and it warns that South Africa is stuck in a negative cycle, subdued economic growth and low investor confidence, which are pushing the Reserve Bank to keep interest rates elevated to attract capital inflows. Now, the report also finds that despite having one of the most advanced capital markets in sub-Saharan Africa, South Africa pays more to borrow than major emerging markets, and they were including India and Malaysia and so forth. But the report does also compare apples with apples when they take a look at Kenya and Nigeria in relation to sub-Saharan Africa. But how should we understand this, more so when South Africa pays more to borrow than many major emerging markets?
Yeah, I think the best way of understanding it is that South Africa pays an increased risk premium compared to the likes of India or Malaysia or Poland or Romania. You know, we still get better. Yeah, I mean, our cost of funding is still much better than Nigeria and Kenya. But there are reasons for that risk premium being as high as it is. And we've already talked about kind of the structural challenges that South Africa faces. We have high unemployment. We have poor educational opportunities. You know, we've also got, you know, significant fiscal pressure. You know, the contingent liabilities from state-owned enterprises, for example, and we have fairly weak growth. But that's not really the whole story. I mean, if you look at it, you know, it does to an extent become a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, because of course we're also junk rated, which you know, all the three big ratings agencies, so Moody's, Fitch, S&P, all have us as a sub-investment grade rating, which isn't just about you know, kind of bad advertising to investors saying, listen, you need to charge a risk premium to investors. It also actually, you know, it has like a mechanism that operates there as well, because we have that junk rating. We're actually excluded from certain capital pools internationally, so we don't access the whole of global capital markets because some mandates just exclude, you know, a sub-investment grade rating sovereign. So in that way, we don't have access to that capital, and that, you know, is the supply and demand. We aren't able to borrow there, so you know, our cost of borrowing goes up as well. I think another thing that's maybe important that wasn't pulled out in that report is also the FX volatility. So the reason that our risk premium is so much higher is because, you know, our currency is far more volatile than the likes of the Malaysian ringgit or the Indian rupee. We have wild swings in the ZAR, and it's unusual because the volume of trade in the South African rand is far larger compared to the size of our economy than other emerging economies. Now, as an investor that's coming to South Africa and saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, lend South Africa money, or I'm going to, you know, invest in South African bonds or you know, fund development here, you're not just taking on, you know, the risk of default. You're also taking on, you know, that FX volatility risk. You know, if you're a US investor coming to South Africa to park money in our bond market, you also face that currency volatility. If the rand suddenly blows out 20%, that's going to severely impact the return that you can expect. Now that's interesting because, you know, if I had to look back, one of the best trades that you could have made is when we were sitting at 19 rand to the US dollar. If you had come and put your money in South African, you know, in South African, let's say, corporate debt at 9 or 10%, you would have had about a 9% FX translation as well. So you had actually made about 18% on your dollars, which is an incredible return. I think investors are just looking at this saying, we've had a big currency appreciation at the moment. There's still these risks. What happens if the currency blows out? Because we know just how volatile it is. And that's just another reason why investors require that risk premium, why they require us to pay a little bit more when we borrow.
I do not even know how to phrase this, but are they condemning reasonably, right? Because when you speak of the ethics risk, ethics volatility risk, that's what it is. Hey, ethics volatility risk.
Yeah, FX, yeah. Okay. So foreign exchange volatility. Yeah.
Are we the only ones? Are we the exception to the rule? Maybe that's why I ask, are they condemning reasonably? Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah, I think it is reasonable. So if you look at our volatility as a currency compared to you know, the other economies that you mentioned, it is significantly higher. And one of the reasons for that is, again, I kind of mentioned the smaller savings pool earlier, but you know, we do have a smaller savings pool, so we are required to you know, attract foreign investments, so foreign portfolio flows. Mm-hmm. Those foreign portfolios tend to push our currency around, and if we had a larger savings base in South Africa, if it was more stable, like India has, for example, you would see our FX volatility dropping significantly, I would imagine. So yeah, I think it probably is fair. You know, also, yeah, I mean, this is one component to a very complex model or a complex picture. But also, you know, is it fair? I mean, we do also have a long history of fiscal slippage as well. So if you look at state capture, corruption, you know, inconsistent policies as well, this is something that it's not something recent. It's something that has been built up over decades, and that's why there's also it's another element to the idea that South Africa deserves a higher risk premium than, let's say, in India or Malaysia.
Sure. Very interesting. Thank you so much, Gary, for taking us through the markets. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.